Welcome to FAU Human Rights Podcast, the podcast of Friedrich Alexander University Erlangen-Nuremberg on contemporary issues of human rights law and politics. My name is Luise Michael and I am a law student at FAU.
And my name is Marie-Louise Böhler and I'm also a law student at the FAU.
Today's podcast is about human rights responsibility of companies in situations of armed conflict, specifically about responsible disengagement of companies.
And with us today is a very special guest. Her name is Katarina Burjakowska, who is a legal professor from Yaroslav Mudzi National Law University based in Ukraine. As an academic teacher, Katarina is delivering lectures and practical sessions on human rights, the rule of law, transitional justice, and legal writing. Katarina has been deeply involved in different business and human rights focused projects since 2016, and she has contributed to different activities on introducing business and human rights in curriculum and promoting business and human rights issues in Ukraine, as she is an expert to International Lab in Business and Human Rights in Yaroslav Mudzi National Law University. Welcome, Katarina, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you very much for inviting me and for giving this fascinating opportunity to present and discuss my preliminary research results and probably even elaborate new insights, as it usually happens when you have discussion in such a fascinating company and team. So as you pointed, I've been working as an expert in the BHR sphere, as an expert at the International Lab for Business and Human Rights at the Yaroslav Mudry National University in Kharkiv. And this lab is really the only one of its kind in Ukraine, so I'm really honored to be a part of it. But in parallel, I've been also involved in project with the focus on human rights protection of victims of armed conflict and projects on international criminal law. For the last 2 years, I was interested in combining these two research areas and research areas of practice. And what that was of great interest to me, and especially after full-scale invasion of Russia, of my native country, Ukraine. Immediately after 24th of February 2022, as one could witness, sanctions were imposed by international actors and foreign countries on business relations with Russia. There was and is now consumer pressure and social movements calling upon multinational companies to stop operating in Russia, so not to fuel economy with taxes, not to exacerbate the aggression and avoid being complicit or directly linked to human rights violations or international humanitarian law breaches or even complicit to international crimes. And this is especially relevant today in the light of the fact that Russian aggression is widely condemned by international organizations, and alleged international crimes committed by Russian army are actively recorded and reported. And of course, this is even more relevant in the light of the fact that the arrest warrants were issued by the prosecutor of international criminal law against Vladimir Putin and other actors. So as one can also remember, there were even created hashtags for social networks, leave Russia, exit Russia, and so on. And being already experienced in the business and human rights area, I was thinking about the responsibility of that companies which will follow these calls and will exit and disengage from Russia. So I was thinking about their responsibility in the sphere of human rights towards their employers, their clients, consumers, and other actors which they are connected to. Because after all, company, it's not just a company. This company, these are thousands of connections and contacts that it acquires. So it just cannot leave the area because it has the responsibility. So the question is, how should companies disengage if they want, if they decide to do it, how they should disengage responsibly from those areas where there are quite high risks for them to be complicit in human rights abuses and violations.
Thank you very much for this interesting introduction, Katerina. When I read about our topic today, I asked myself, why do companies even have to consider whether they want to stay in a country? Because when we think about the slogans that arose after the Russian aggression started, to me it was obvious that companies have to leave the country to avoid putting more money into the country and therefore somehow supporting the Russian aggression. So this is my question towards you. Why do companies even have to consider to stay in a country, and what could be reasons for that?
Thank you. I think it's a very good question. And the answer to this question depends on the paradigm we are looking through. Because if we don't look at this problem under the paradigm of business and human rights and corporate responsibility, the answer will be, you can do what you want. You can stay or you can leave. So it's up to you. But if we look through the paradigm of corporate responsibility to respect human rights, the answer is quite different. And it is not so easy and a little bit tricky. But to answer this question, I would probably need to give just general overview of what is corporate responsibility in the sphere of human rights is. So traditionally, we consider states as the main bearers of obligations in the sphere of human rights. Positive obligations, negative obligations, ensuring social welfare, and so on. But by the mid of 20th century, as researchers in a brilliant way noticed, that world became a global village with a single global market and multinational companies with unprecedented expansion. So that many corporations of transnational nature today possess budgets which exceed some GDPs of some nations and states. And they have extensive structure of branches, subsidiaries, manufacturing facilities, numerous contractors, suppliers. Many multinational companies, they operate in different jurisdictions at the same time in the world. In the world, where there are around 120 armed conflicts and a quite big aggressive war in the center of Europe. And traditional approach to obligations in the sphere of human rights was shifted to quite another paradigm, which says that all the actors of the society, especially such powerful and influential as multinational companies, they should be responsible for human rights. And human rights here is understood as a universal transnational norm. So it is not enshrined in any, it is very good if it is enshrined in the national legislation, but it does not depend on national legislation. So corporate actors should be responsible for human rights, and human rights is understood as a universal norm. What does it mean to be responsible for human rights? It means at least to avoid making negative impacts on the human rights of all who surround you, in a simple words. And businesses, especially big businesses, which are quite powerful actors in society, they cannot ignore this role and influence they have in societies. So, and of course, if we talk about conflict-affected areas where the risks of human rights are quite high, and risks of international crimes to be committed are quite high, demands for this corporate responsibility to respect human rights are even higher in these situations.
So where do we find this concept then? And why is it or is it not a decision which the businesses have to think about if they disengage?
Yeah, that's also a good question, because the idea of corporate responsibility for human rights, it is not enshrined from a legal perspective in any legally binding instrument, as it usually happens, for example, with obligations of states, where we can find them in the European Convention on Human Rights or other, for example, hard law instruments. There is no legally binding instrument of that kind of hard law which would say exactly that corporations bear the responsibility in the sphere of human rights. Today, we are witnessing a drafting process of UN treaty document on business and human rights, but it's at the moment it's only a drafting process. There is a worldwide discussion in this regard. But two documents, two instruments, we cannot, of course, ignore. And there are two authoritative documents which contain this idea of corporate responsibility. In 1976, under the auspice of Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, there were promulgated guidelines for multinational enterprises, or they called OECD guidelines. And they introduced new formula of responsible business conduct, which means that business conduct should be consistent with applicable laws of countries where they operate or they derive from, and internationally recognized standards. In 1976, this document was silent about human rights compliance, about compliance of business conduct with human rights. However, the things changed in 2011, and OECD guidelines, they were complemented by additional special human rights chapter, but they were complemented with it in connection with the emergence of quite significant authoritative document, which is called United Nations Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights. It is still not hard law document, but it is so authoritative that a lot of decisions, even legal decisions, legal texts, they appeal to this document, because this document introduced quite novel idea that alongside the states, corporations of and businesses of any size, any sector of operation, they should avoid negative impacts on human rights of all those who are surrounding them. And this corporate responsibility, which is called corporate responsibility to respect human rights, it is understood as a global standard of expected conduct for all business enterprises, wherever they operate. And what is interesting, it is also enshrined in sustainable development goals. So it is understood that respect for human rights serves the idea of sustainable development goals. So what should businesses do to express and show and know and show what they should do to respect human rights? What does it practically mean? So the United Nations Guiding Principles, UNGPs, they say that to implement corporate responsibility to respect human rights, businesses should exercise a special mechanism, special procedure, which is called due diligence. It means that every business has to watch out whether it creates risks for human rights or maybe already created harm, and then should seek ways how to mitigate these risks and the remedy harm suffered, and then assess whether the mitigation and remediation was proper. So literally, it is about managing risks. And what is the key idea here? That the higher risks, the higher due diligence and responsibility you have.
So the United Nations guiding principles don't say leave that country completely and shut down all the businesses you have?
No, they don't say that. What they say is this responsibility is heightened. So you have to take care that you do not contribute or create impacts on harms. But when you see that someone does it, you have to use leverage toward that party to stop doing this harm.
Could you explain the concept of leverage a bit more, perhaps? What does this concept comprise?
Yes, I think it's a relevant question in the light of the fact that disengagement is the last resort. And before that, of course, you have to exhaust all the relevant mechanisms which are in the vocabulary of UNGPs is called leverage. You have to use all the relevant and available mechanisms to influence others. It is not so easy and quite tricky in situations of conflicts, of armed conflicts, when you are in the middle of the conflict or you are operating in the country where the illegal change of government, but you still operate to supply goods, for example, food and any other goods for your suppliers. You still decide to be there. You, as a business, can even contribute as much as it is possible to mitigating challenges to the rule of law in the country or to the human rights. From the perspective of the UNGPs, they say only about the general idea of using that leverage. And what kind of leverage you can use is not always apparent or easily measured in the situation. Of course, different scenarios are possible here. So, for example, you might think about the revisiting or reviewing trade practices with that actors which are contributing or causing harm for other people. Or, for example, lending practices. In such complex environments like Russia, which is basically cannot be called as a conflict-affected area, because actually Ukrainian territory is now conflict-affected area. And it is really interesting how to qualify from the perspective of UNGPs the territory of Russia, because it is not basically conflict-affected area. Let's say it is complex environment with authoritative practices in exercising power in Russia and so on. So as a leverage, many multinational companies used influence on their partners from Russia when they are part of joint ventures. So they try to convince them that it is not relevant from perspective of human rights to stay in Russia. You might use stakeholders, dialogues with civil societies. In situation of armed conflicts, you can utilize the conversations and dialogues with embassies, for example, or international organizations. So I would say this is kind of soft power. But this raises the interesting question about the role of corporations in countries or societies which are in transition from anti-democratic regimes to democratic regimes.
Thank you. This is very interesting. What should business owners do if they operate in a conflict-affected area?
Mm-hmm. UNGPs say that due diligence should be exercised in any context, of course. Any type of business you have, any size you are, and so forth. But when you operate in conflict-affected area, or you have business relations with businesses operating in conflict-affected environments where the risks of human rights abuses are quite high, your due diligence is heightened. So you have to take care that you, by yourself, do not contribute to international humanitarian law violations or do not aid or abet international crimes. In these situations, UNGPs and other, let's say, interpretational instruments, which are issued by special United Nations working groups, they say that you have to make even study of the situation. You have to learn about warning signs. If, for example, you are not in conflict-affected environment, but you can witness that there are some challenges to the rule of law in the country. So you have to thoroughly study all the surrounding environment and to understand what are the risks for human rights of this, let's say, complicated or complex environment, and to understand how to mitigate them. But if you are, as a business, make sure that you are not by yourself creating any harm and impacts on human rights, which is basically not so easy in the situations when you operate in conflict-affected area or, for example, in the authoritative regime. So it is not so easy to not to be complicit or somehow linked to these challenges to the human rights and to the rule of law. But when you are witnessing that another actor, which you are directly linked with your business relations or business operations, causes or contributes to human rights abuses and violations. So you just witness that. You do not contribute to that harm. And you cannot anyhow influence on that actor or use any leverage. So any leverage or any influence on that actor is irrelevant. Leverage to make stop causing harm for people and for human rights. Then you may think about ending this relationship. Thus disengagement is understood as a last resort, which should be, however, done responsibly. So once you think about leaving the area, you have to thoroughly think on which risks your disengagement will create for human rights. So basically, you have to weigh risks you avoid by disengagement and risks you impose with disengagement. And of course, it is not enough only to think about it. You have to think about the ways how to mitigate these risks. So actually, your obligation, responsibility in the sphere of human rights and this exercise of due diligence, it doesn't stop at the moment when you just exit the country. You bear this responsibility as much as it will contribute to mitigating the risks. But in such situations as conflict-affected environments, where the risks of being complicit in international humanitarian law violations or international crimes, these risks are quite severe. So sometimes disengagement is the only way to stop being linked with these violations. And for example, arms trade, when you're as a company which supplies arms to anyone in the world, you have to think about who do you supply arms to. For example, if it's this non or illegal armed groups and you supply arms to them, you of course have to understand for which reasons and for which aims these arms will be used. And in this situation, probably not to launch this business relationship and stop supplying arms will be the best decision in this situation.
Do you perhaps have a concrete example for us for a company which decided to disengage from a conflict-related area when it should rather actually have stayed? Or an example for a company which decided to stay in the area when it actually should have rather disengaged because the leverage just wasn't high enough?
Mm-hmm. We have hundreds of examples only in the context of, for example, Russian invasion of Ukraine, but not limited to that. But I would rather decide to talk about one example which has already been adjudicated. The legal assessment to this decision to disengage was already done. I would talk about so-called Telenor case, which took place in Myanmar. So as one might know, Rohingya Muslim people in northwestern Myanmar experienced genocide since 2016 to 2018. Then in February 2021, a military coup d'etat happened. So it's really quite complex environment. And the question is about the disengagement of Telenor Myanmar. This is the company, subsidiary of Telenor company, which is Norway based. Telenor entered the Myanmar market in 2013 as a result of international competition. And Telenor played a leading role in digitalization of Myanmar. In just a few years, towers were built by efforts of Telenor almost everywhere in the country. And this actually revolutionized Myanmar's society very much, but for better, for worse. After coup d'etat happened in February 2021, Telenor was ordered several times by military government to remove some IP addresses. So they were ordered to make some things as an ICT company, which they didn't want to do, but That was the order of military government. And finally, after some efforts to publicly announce about the pressure from military government, these announcements were unsuccessful, and even more pressure they suffered after that. In July 2021, they decided to sell. So Norway Telenor company decided to sell its subsidiary in Myanmar to another company, which is called M1 Group. That is a Lebanese investment holding company. It has this history of conducting business in authoritarian countries, and they face unresolved allegations of corruption and terrorist financing. And that, of course, created risks for the users of Telenor, because it created risks for their right to private life, privacy, and created risks of persecution on political grounds, of course. And with these concerns, with these serious concerns, one of quite well-known organizations which are experienced in strategic litigation, SOMO, on behalf of more than 400 civil society organizations from Myanmar, they filed a complaint in Norway to National Contact Point, which reviews how companies follow the OECD guidelines. And main charge in this complaint was that Telenor, Norway company Telenor, did not exercise due diligence and did not assess risks of its disengagement from Myanmar. So this company should have thought about the risks created by selling the subsidiary to the company which has unresolved allegations of corruption and terrorist financing and is experienced conducting business in authoritarian countries. The procedure in this national contact point went in a way that these civil society organizations and Telenor, they concluded memorandum of understanding, and they decided and agreed on actions ahead which Telenor has to exercise even after its disengagement from Myanmar. So, for example, they decided that Telenor will support an independent ICT ecosystem study for specifically Myanmar, so that Telenor will create different stakeholder meetings and creates a lesson sharing the opportunity platform. So I think that the main and the key conclusion of this case is that due diligence and responsibility in the sphere of human rights does not stop when you disengage from country or from any society or environment where you find inappropriate to stay longer.
Thank you very much for elaborating on this topic, Katja. Could you perhaps give us a short summary of the main points and also a brief outlook on how the field of business and human rights will evolve given the backgrounds of the Russian aggression?
I would say that with all the examples provided during this conversation, both example of Russian invasion of Ukraine and Myanmar case, I think they are demonstrating the processes of shaping the general standards enshrined in such instruments as United Nations Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights and the OECD guidelines. These standards are coming alive, though through tragic events and experiences. Of course, I believe that many things in the sphere of corporate responsibility to respect human rights could be revisited and revised. For example, discussing how to conduct business in anti-democratic regimes, which at the same time exercise aggressive external wars. And they are actually being revisited because an extensive debates are held in the sphere of business and human rights. In few words, it is obvious that the world of business and human rights will never be the same as before.
With that, I would say thank you very much for being here today and for having had this conversation with us today. It was a pleasure to have you, despite all the things going on in the world right now.
I can only agree with Louisa. Thank you very much, Katharina. I really enjoyed making this podcast with you, and it's been so interesting to just listen to you and to listen to the experience you could share with us. And I'm very looking forward to the next podcast, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me, and I wish you all the best and good luck with your research and study.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you, as a listener, are interested in more on business and human rights, and specifically in the situation in Ukraine, I would recommend you listen to the episodes 28 and 29 of this very podcast.